Hello, everyone, and welcome to Crowder Chronicles. Icky Bricky Pain Cast. This is Audrey.
And Amber.
And we're here to talk to you today about, well, chronic pain, but specifically chronic pain accommodations, like at work, in life in general, what that looks like, what that feels like, and when to disclose, and kind of how to disclose it, also some tips and thinking about when you should maybe disclose. And we want to reach people that maybe have been through this process or are worried about going through this process, have ever felt like upset or frustrated that they're unable mm-hmm. to participate fully at work due to their chronic pain issues. And we also want to recognize that, you know, chronic pain has a widespread effect on our whole lives. Personal, psychological, social, work life. And it can sometimes, unfortunately, hinder our ability to complete tasks. Mm-hmm. So that can also create negative feelings or misunderstandings. So, yes, that's what we're talking about today. Have you had this experience, Amber?
Yeah, I would say many times. As I've, like, become used to my chronic pain and as I've, like, implemented that more into like my life and how I go about it, I've like come to the decision that I don't want to like hide my chronic pain anymore. I don't want to put the effort into like masking who I am when I know that I can contribute in the workplace just as much with my chronic pain. So I disclose a lot. I talk a lot about it at work very comfortably. And then at the same time, I have so far lost a number of positions because of these disclosures. People start treating me differently at work. People are not very understanding of it. And yeah, it's been a journey, but I still firmly believe that disclosure is important for me. And that's how I like to present myself in the workplace. So finding ways to do that, that's what I'm learning. What about you, Audrey?
Yeah, so I haven't had to seek employment with the diagnosis yet, because I found out when I was already employed. I'm very much an open book, so my journey was mm-hmm. very out there, and everyone knew what I was going through. I think that helped in a way because it helped people were on my journey with me. Mm-hmm. And, but also I have come across ways of feeling in my own life, like in my own head, basically about that, like contributing to my worth at work. Mm-hmm. So like always being a person that was counted on all the time and, would pick up slack, would do extra. Like I was always been an overachiever. So
yeah,
to have like this, way of being now that means that I can't live up to those expectations anymore can get me kind of down. And also I've been told by my, you know, people I work with that I hide it well. And that kind of to me is not recognizing the struggle part of it. And also I don't obviously walk around all day holding my back and like complaining. Just because I'm not complaining doesn't mean it's not there. And I understand that, you know, I don't expect people to always have my health top of their minds, but sure. If I'm employed for you, maybe just kind of recognizing that it is a daily struggle, and that just because I don't talk about it doesn't minimize it, the impact.
And it's weird too that like that is the response you're receiving. It's very valorizing of that pain of like, oh, you hide it so well. That's so great. It's so great that you're able to hide the pain that you're in every day to this extent that I don't even notice it. Like, thank you. Mm-hmm. That's great. And that's really dismissive of what you're going through. Yeah. You know? I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, because I mean, our goal is ultimately to manage our pain long term, and we need to establish a comfortable environment that's at home, at work, in our community. And like, instead of kind of gauging every day, like it's nice to do a check-in, but you know, what would be better or good on top of it would also be accommodations. At work. And when I say accommodations, I'm talking about like physical accommodations. I'm talking about flexible job design, replacing equipment and modifying your workstation, possibly changing task intensity, maybe breaking tasks into smaller tasks, like instead of having to be like the person who plans the whole thing, maybe you're just someone that plans part of it. Flexibility in your work hours and location. That's huge for me.
That's huge.
Because, and that's why, you know, I'm seeking remote work is for that very reason. That, like, you know, I can't I can't always be 100%, but if I'm able to rest and take breaks and go for a walk or whatever it might be that I need to do at that time, I need to have that flexibility to be able to function properly some days. So,
yeah, and we need workplaces that kind of like understand that that is the way for us to show up most productively. Like, that is how I show up with the most creativity and the most like the most ability to do my job and to problem solve around my job and come up with solutions is when, you know, all of my energy is not going into, well, I need to do that thing that you were congratulated for, where I make sure that other people are not seeing how much pain I'm in. I'm not making other people uncomfortable. I'm not presenting a certain way. I'm not, you know, so focused on whether or not I'm going to get to my next meeting, like walking wise. Because I'm already in the comfort of my own home and I can go to my meeting. And so that doesn't have to become a part of that decision-making process. And I find that that is often diminished. Like, that need is often diminished. I worked at a location once where the travel to the place was an hour by bus. So that was an hour for me to get there on the bus. So not managing the time it takes me to get to the bus stop, how long it takes me after the bus stop to get off the bus and get to my place of employment. So it was honestly like more like an hour and a half transit time in the morning and when I left in the evening. And that, like, standing on the bus is a whole other thing. Like, being on the bus when you're have chronic pain and the buses are busy and you're not visibly disabled, that's a whole thing. But the drain that had on my body of going into the office, eventually I had to disclose to my employer, because I needed more hybrid understanding of what I was able to do. And in that moment, I didn't receive a lot of understanding from my employer about, even though we had hybrid options where I could work from home some days, there wasn't a lot of understanding around how much energy it takes just to transit to work when you're chronically ill, you know? And like that, I ended up leaving that position because it was just too tiring. It was exhausting to do that. And I think it's really scary. It is sometimes scary to hear other disabled folks talk about their experiences and how their employers, they go to them for accommodations and then they receive a lot of pushback, like enough that I ended up leaving my position. But I do think that it is unfortunate. And I think that disclosure, regardless of, like, I've disclosed a number of times, I've lost a number of jobs, is still really important, because that it's not just important to have a place of employment. It's important to have a place of employment that feels safe, that isn't draining me so much that I am unable to engage in other parts of my life because I'm spending 3 hours in transit, right? Like, that just isn't going to be sustainable.
And unfortunately, to get the accommodations, we have to disclose why, and sometimes and sometimes have to like maybe what's the word I'm looking for? Convince.
Yeah, that's like how it's feels.
It feels like a daunting task sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It is. And so I think it'd be good for us today to talk a little bit about what our experiences have been like, what we've learned in doing that, and what we asked for. Because it's also really hard. A lot of the burden when we disclose in work or even other situations, a lot of the burden falls on you to determine what your needs are. It falls on you to be able to articulate that.
Yeah.
And when I was in university, this was something I encountered because at my university, you could apply for accommodations for disabilities where you could get extensions on papers and things like that. And I would have benefited from that service, but I was so overwhelmed seeking that service and trying to explain what I needed and not knowing what I could ask for or what would be useful to me because I'd never done it before, and not having people who were able to support me in asking was really difficult. And so I never ended up getting accommodations in university just because the process was scary and intimidating.
Sorry, my dogs are I don't know if you can hear that. Apologies.
No, that's fine.
I live in a house that can be sometimes chaotic. It's true. And it always feels like that's the smallest step to take is say, hey, this is what I'm going through. But it cannot, sometimes it's not the smallest step. Sometimes it's like jumping off the cliff, right?
It's such a free fall.
Here we go.
Yeah, it's a lot of trust that's being placed in a situation where you don't know how that's going to go.
Yeah.
And especially if you're somebody with chronic pain who's new to your journey, who maybe doesn't even have a diagnosis, like that adds another layer as well. If you're still seeking diagnosis, if you don't have the resources for a diagnosis, but you're still experiencing this daily level of pain, it's just terrifying. You know, and workplaces will often say that accommodations is something they offer, but that's kind of where that starts and stops.
Yeah. It's like the paragraph underneath the job posting that has to go there sometimes, right?
Yeah. It's like something that they throw in as an afterthought that they haven't actually thought out. And I think that that comes back to some of the stigmas as well around what we expect a disabled person to look like and be like, and people assume that they can see disability in the workplace, and that's not always true. And right. So they only engage in those conversations about accommodations when they feel like they can see that somebody would benefit from it, and if you don't, then they assume that you don't need it, and so they don't talk about it.
And I like to include mental health in that as well. Like another invisible thing that people go through.
Definitely.
You know, and unfortunately, it's the same thing for folks that have mental health issues or, you know, have things they have to kind of manage. Being honest about it in the workplace can get really, really, really tense because then you get looked at with a different lens, right?
You do. There's this whole lens that comes down with mental illness. There's this whole lens with disability, with chronic pain. And we know that folks with chronic pain experience a lot of mental illness. So oftentimes these things are coming in tandem, you know? And we know that struggling with the mental health impacts our chronic pain and vice versa. So the way that you get responded to in the workplace really does have an impact on how you're doing mentally.
Yeah. And we know from research that's been done by multiple different people, organizations, that workers feel more positive, better with their life, more productive when they are working, despite chronic pain, despite mental illness, despite any kind of disability. People want to have a purpose. People want to have a way to look after themselves. They want to be a part of their society. They want to be a part of a workplace. Is more often
there are a lot
of
benefits.
Yeah. And it helps to maintain our positive mental health. Like,
it does.
And it can be improved by making sure that, you know, you can be able to communicate with your management or, you know, other coworkers.
Yeah, like, it has a huge impact. I'm wondering where we should go next, Audrey. Should we talk a little bit about, where do you think we should head next?
Well, I think we should talk about taking the first step. So, like,
yeah, okay,
what a support system can look like when we're looking for support. So, for me, a support system would look like me saying, "Hey, this is what my experience is, and this is what my experience will be, during my time here," and it would be wonderful if I could have a way to talk to you openly about it, not being judged, but just so we can figure out a way for me to also be a productive and meaningful part of the team, even if it's as a day that I'm having a bad pain day or a bad mental health day. And kind of figuring out, like, it has to be collaborative, right? So
I was just about to say, I love how collaborative that is.
Yeah, like, it has to be input from both sides. It has to be just ensuring everyone's needs are met. And we want to have an inclusive environment. So, like, if it is, like, a workplace that maybe you do have to go to every day, maybe if you're not having a bad pain day, instead of having to take a sick day, maybe finding stuff that for those days you could do from home and get paid for. Or maybe having a discussion around switching things around on those days so that your workload isn't as heavy, and then maybe you can take on more stuff another day. Or, I mean, for me, it's really about communication and collaboration, I guess.
Yeah, I would agree, because the burden shouldn't solely be on you to walk into this meeting and say, okay, here's A, B, and C. This is what I need. This is, like, the hard and fast rules. And I mean, you can take that approach, and that might be useful in some workplaces. But a lot of the times, again, we don't know what to ask for when it comes to those hard and fast rules. We don't know what's possible. And we often as well undersell ourselves a lot of the time. So we might be asking for less than we could be getting as well, which is why we want to keep that collaborative space open. And I think approaching it from the perspective that this is the first of many conversations, like, this isn't something where you're going to walk in.
Exactly. Yeah.
Tell them everything. Let them know every nitty gritty detail. Let them, like, bring in articles, and, like, that'll be it. And they'll remember from then on out. This is more of a process. This is something where you start the conversation. And I think that's how we should kind of envision that in our heads, because it's a little less intimidating to think that this is me just giving them a heads up of something that is going to have to be continually talked about. For my comfort and for the workplace.
Kind of bridging what you just said, too. Knowing there's nothing wrong with you. I want to just put that out there. Everyone has the right to accommodations. Even if you're not experiencing chronic pain, if you say to your employer, this is how I work best. Like, even thinking about my neurodivergent folks as well. Or people like that. Like, you know, if you need a certain thing to do your work the way that you feel safe and productive to you, it should be offered. And
absolutely,
I also want to point out, if it isn't offered and if someone's being constantly ignored or not given that opportunity, they're going to have to go on sick leave because they're going to get ill. Like, every time.
If they don't just leave the job entirely.
Yeah, if they're either going to leave or they're going to be sick and have to go off. So, what would you rather?
Like,
prolonged sick leave, having to get somebody else to fill that position, or working with them and collaborating about a workplace that feels safe and productive to them?
Exactly.
And to you.
Yes.
And to you as the employer.
And you deserve to ask for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that is your right as a worker. You're allowed to ask for these things and feel empowered to ask for those things, and you shouldn't be receiving pushback in those situations when what you're asking for is, hey, I can do my job if you allow me to do these things. And that doesn't seem like a big ask.
Communication is really key. And it you have is. To, you have to be in a position and an environment where there is like transparency.
Yes. And we don't always find ourselves in those situations.
No, and you can't be under a banner per se to say, be like, oh yeah, well this is like it, this is the way that the, you know, the power dynamic is that those mm-hmm. people up there, I don't know what they're doing, they don't know what I'm doing. That's not gonna work.
No, because you can't hide your, like, we might be able to manage our chronic pain. We will have bad days though. We will have bad days yeah. that are out of our hands.
Yep.
It is going to influence our work sometimes. Like, I'm going to have brain fog some days and forget some things that maybe I shouldn't have forgotten. But I need to be able to have that communication so that I can at least explain what's going on in those moments instead of them chalking it up to, and maybe they still will, but at least I'll have made my defense. They won't chalk. They can't just chalk it up to my ability to work and my capacity to work and whether I am good at what I do or not, when I know that it is something that I'm physically going through.
I have a question for people. Sorry.
Oh, I just have one suggestion is that I've been in workplaces where that communication isn't there. Yeah. And one of the things that I did in the last place of employment that I had was I had coworkers who were very understanding and who knew what I was going through because I was working with them on a day-to-day level and we were collaborating on group projects. And so I did disclose to my coworkers before I disclosed to management. And it became apparent that I needed to disclose to management. And so I let my team know, those two people that I trusted in the work environment, who were responding well with me, who had my back. I told them that I was going to be making this disclosure. And I told them what I was going to say. I worked with them on that. And I did disclose. And the reason I bring that up is because I ended up leaving this workplace because they were unaccommodating. But what was useful to me during that time, and as I was dealing with those pressures, was knowing that I had two of my coworkers who were on my side, who I would relay times where I felt like, oh, I feel like they're not understanding. I feel like maybe they're chalking this up to my chronic pain. And those people also seeing that and also having their backup when it came to when I left that place of employment, whether I needed to file any discriminatory allegations against them, I had their support and knowledge of that. And those coworkers would also occasionally support me in meetings where I would talk to management. They would come with me and sit with me as peers as I made something clear to my management that I didn't feel like they were understanding. And that was really meaningful to me. And I felt like that empowered me in my workplace to continue to advocate for my needs, even when I wasn't experiencing good communication from management about that, because I had support. So I guess I would suggest that if you feel like communication is going to be an issue in your workplace, having a coworker that is around witnessing it and seeing everything, keeping note of these things. So note down when you talk to management, what you tell them, what disclosures you make, what kind of accommodations you asked for, and then keeping track of whether or not there's any follow through, whether or not you get pushback, any projects you get taken off, what kind of comments get said to you that you feel were personal. Like, these are just good things to note for your own safety as a worker, because we know, unfortunately, that workplaces are not always going to be safe places for disabled folks. So protect yourself as much as you can, even if those situations you end up leaving anyway.
Can I ask a question about that? So
yeah, totally.
When you would have your work, like peer support, basically, come with you to your meetings, did you tell your employer that was happening? When, or did you just bring them? The reason I ask is because I've been in those situations and management have felt like they're being attacked.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to bring that up and see how you dealt with that.
I would, because of, I'll give a two-part answer. So, like, the first while, I would strategically set up these situations. So I had an office that my and my coworkers shared, and my management's office was across the hall. And so if I wanted to talk to management about an accommodation or something similar, I would bring them in to the shared office with my coworkers. And I would say, I would like to talk about this that I'm experiencing today. So today I'm feeling particularly foggy, or I might have to leave early because of this pain that I'm having. And if management wanted to, like, say, oh, well, let's go talk in the other room, I would say, well, I've already talked to my coworkers about it. I'm really comfortable just having the conversation here. If you don't mind, if we could just stay here and chat, it's only going to take a minute. And I would orchestrate that on purpose in order to protect myself.
Yeah.
And that was in the beginning. And that usually went over well, because usually it was a quick conversation that I was having just to update them on what was going through. But towards the end of my employment, things got really messy, essentially. And I did have to have a one-on-one meeting with my employer to discuss everything that had been going on. And I showed up to that meeting with my coworker, and I did not tell management that I was bringing them. And they requested if we could talk alone, and I straightforwardly told them that I wasn't comfortable at this point speaking alone with them. And I told them that I'm feeling really uncomfortable ever since I've disclosed. I feel like I've been experiencing some pushback since my disclosure, and I really feel like I need a support person in this moment in order to have this meeting at all. And I'm comfortable with this person hearing everything that we're going to discuss, whether it's a critique of me or whether you have things that you want to say. I'm more than comfortable with you saying them in front of this person. If you're not comfortable with that, unfortunately, I don't feel like we're going to be able to have a productive conversation, because yeah. I'm not going to feel safe if I'm here by myself because of the way I've been treated recently.
And I also like to point out, oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and that's just, and they allowed it because I needed a support person.
And I also want to point out that if we're wanting to meet about our own needs, it's not personal.
Exactly.
It's not a personal attack on management or
no,
or the system that we work in or anybody in particular. It's just saying, I'm advocating for this because I need it.
Yes. Yeah. And that is how the conversations began for me.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, my management in this situation made it personal to the point where I had to bring in a support person for that reason. But you could very well also just adapt that to say, I would like a support person because that makes me feel more comfortable. I'm concerned about my ability to convey what I'm feeling because I'm feeling really anxious. And I just like to have a support person here with me.
And you also want to feel like your management trusts you and they trust them. Like,
yeah.
You can't have a relationship like that without trust.
Exactly.
And yeah, if you're like just believing someone, if they say, this is my experience, believe them.
Mm-hmm. That is just so simple.
On the other hand, if someone says, I'm feeling this way, then talk about it. If that's not, because I found a lot of times we make assumptions about what other people are thinking and feeling or why they make the decisions they make or why they say the things they say. We do it in our whole lives and every aspect of our lives.
Definitely. I think it's just,
if we're confused about that or if we're feeling a certain way or feeling attacked or we're feeling like something's not going the way we want to go, how about just asking? Like,
yeah,
here's what I hear you saying. Is that what you're saying? And when someone says no or yes or whatever, just believing them that, like, yeah, okay, this is how I'm feeling. If you don't trust them to tell you the truth, then why bother asking the question, I guess?
Right? Yeah, like, why bother having the meeting at all if you're not going to trust what's said in that meeting?
Right.
If you're not able to have that conversation.
Right.
I think that trust needs to be extended. I think a lot of times we assume, like you were saying, a lot of things about people that are not necessarily true. And it would it be just as simple as I'm having some difficulty understanding what's going on in this moment? You know, maybe I don't have enough information. Maybe I don't know enough about your disability or what you're going through. Ask questions. Yeah. You know, I'm the one here asking for accommodations. I'm the one explaining my experience to you on purpose. Like, that mm-hmm. is the time to be asking questions. I'm asking you to ask questions. That would actually help. I find that to be very useful, especially when we don't know, you know, what can I ask for in the workplace? What kind of accommodations can I even request?
Yeah, it's true. And yes, I agree with that. I agree with that. And because I'm just pulling on my own experiences too, right? So I'm pulling yeah. on the things that, and so are you. And like, since I'm pretty new to the whole diagnosis, I have actually had chronic pain since I was 15. So yeah. It's like, just because I just have the diagnosis now does not mean that I haven't always had chronic pain. And yeah. I'm also trying to figure that out for myself. And that's kind of where I come from it. From my perspective, is I'm fairly new with the diagnosis. I've also had to make accommodations in my life, but just been used to not having them. So didn't always yeah. feel like I could ask for them, right?
That's such a big part of it. And I feel yep. like you made a really good point there, because I think we touched on it briefly, but a lot of the times people are not diagnosed, or they're mm-hmm. going through the process of diagnosis, which we know takes on average like 5 to 10 years. Like, you're working during that time. Like, you are going to work, doing things and pushing through yep. and not having the resources to get accommodations or know what to ask for. And it's such a different change. It's just a different experience to walk in knowing, okay, this is what I have. And I am going to try asking for things to try and make working easier than it's been in the past 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
When you're used to pushing through, because you just learn how to do that, unfortunately.
And I also want to make that point, because for all those people that mm-hmm. are employers or whoever might be saying, well, how about your, why aren't you doing something for yourself? I yeah. can honestly tell you, I do something every single day. I have a routine that helps me be mm-hmm. functional, that helps me be mobile, that helps me be a contributor. I have yep. to absolutely change my entire personal life and the expectations of me as a family member and mm-hmm. also as a community member. Like, it's not just at work. So just be aware to everyone out there that's thinking, oh, is it just up to the employers? I'm telling you. and I don't know a single person that deals with chronic pain or chronic illness of any type that doesn't yeah. make their own accommodations daily at work and at home and in their life. Yeah. So just
who want hasn't you to been know. Doing it for the past 5 to 10 years that they were not yeah. diagnosed. Like, they've been doing that work, but now they're just asking for their work-related right mm-hmm. to have some support in those situations from their management, because now they can do that. Like, it's not as big of a shift as people think it is.
And you may have been with an employer with a diagnosis and not told them right away because yeah. you weren't comfortable or didn't trust them. But sure. please, employers, if someone is disclosing to you this is what they're going through, it's because they trust you now.
Yeah,
they trust you, and that's a good thing, and you should probably try to maintain that relationship with that person.
Yes, I agree. That last job that I was discussing, I didn't disclose right away. I did disclose, however, I'm just remembering there was a job in between here where I did disclose in my interview, like right from the get-go, that this is part of what I'm experiencing. This is, if you hire me, I have chronic pain. I'm going to have bad days. But as well, I am somebody who is every day making accommodations for myself. I am every day making decisions in order to make sure that I can meet the commitments that I commit to. And I feel like this is a job where I could commit to what is required of me in a way that is fulfilling and is going to meet both of our needs. But I did disclose in my interview, and I did get hired. And they knew that. That job also didn't end well. They did know from the get-go what they were signing up for. But that's a new move for me. In previous interviews, I didn't disclose that because I was worried about a lot of these things happening that we hear stories of where people don't get hired because they admit that they need accommodations or their experiences don't line up with what they're looking for. And a lot of the times, employers don't fully even understand that folks with disabilities are already making accommodations. Like, they're already doing that daily. You know, that's not something that's going to get in the way of me doing my job. What's going to get in the way of me doing my job is if I'm not supported or understood in the workplace. That's what's adding the extra strain, because otherwise I would be able to handle everything I've signed up for. Otherwise I wouldn't have signed up.
Absolutely. And so many thoughts I have right now. I'm just trying to organize them. So
I know it's a big discussion.
It is a big discussion. I guess for me too, like, it's knowing that asking for something, especially if you're asking for something in a place you may not feel supported, is gonna take some time. So really give yourself some grace. And if it's not perceived the way you want it to be perceived, maybe taking a look at whether or not that's the environment you want to be in. But also, like, here's my thing. I come home from work. I come home from work doing things the way I normally would do them, and I can't do anything else. Right?
Yep.
So I could spend I have a Monday to Friday job. If things are really bad pain-wise that week and I make my accommodations, but I still have a hard time fulfilling duties.
Because that happens.
I have weekends off and literally would be able to do nothing all weekends, be able to do nothing in my weekdays. And that breeds not resentment, it's not the right word, but like it's very hard not to get depressed when all you have the energy to do in your life is work.
And you're working so hard to work because it's work to do all that. And if you go into a place every day where you know that that's been your week, you know you've had a bad pain week, your coping mechanisms may not be working as well as you want them to, you're doing your best, you went in, you did all of the stuff that was expected of you, maybe even more than that.
Yeah.
You spent your whole weekend at home, relaxed, trying to recuperate, and maybe not even fully getting there. And then to go to your workplace that next Monday and have something happen, or to feel unappreciated or feel like they're not understanding your lived experience of your pain after you did all of that work and nothing for yourself just to show up on Monday.
Exactly.
Like, of course, that is going to breed something akin to resentment.
Or booking a meeting 15 minutes before you're supposed to leave on a Friday. After on Fridays, I'm done. Like,
like, you're
mentally,
exhausted.
Physically, like, just done. And just counting sometimes the minutes till I could go just be in my own space. That's what I'm trying to avoid. And that's why I've been working for 2 years on upskilling my life so I can do this for myself. So trust me when I tell you, it's been a daily thing for 2 years, me trying to get to a place where I can feel comfortable to be at work and also have a life outside of work. And so I want people to know that, like, employers to know that as well. Not just for me, but for all of us. Like,
and I think that another thing that is, you know, useful in these conversations is once you disclose as well, you can make more personal accommodations for yourself. Mm-hmm. So there are certain things that you can do that you might not do if you're trying to avoid being discovered, for lack of a better word, as being disabled or chronically in pain. For example, like I, in one of those places of employment, I started, actually in both of my last jobs, I would occasionally bring with me to work my cane. Because my cane, especially when I was in that job that had a long transit, was something that allowed me to show up. It would allowed me to keep meetings that I might not have otherwise been able to keep because I had my cane with me. Or sometimes, like, wearing those things, I forget what they're called now, those things that you put on your knees and they're, like, compression-y. Piece like of material. Braces? Braces, leg braces, yes. And ankle braces. Things like heating pads, things like ice packs. That was stuff I was able to bring to the last two places of employment that I had because I wasn't, I might have had some concerns because the places I worked at last were volatile, but I wasn't concerned they would find out that I was chronically in pain. People knew why I was using these assistive devices, why I had these tools, and I was able to bring them to work with me because of that. So disclosing to your employer is not just for like their benefit and for them to know and for them to make accommodations for you. It's also so that you can make accommodations for yourself by bringing tools and things with you that help you to show up in a space.
How do you feel when people say to you, well, I have this, this, and this going on. Just suck it up, you know. I just want to say to those people, I actually wish that you had support. I wish you had a support system.
Yeah,
I really hope at some point you can put yourself first, prioritize yourself and your own well-being and the well-being of your family and your friends and your circle
and your coworkers
and do something for yourself because it's not selfish to do so. And when people are asking for something, it's because they need it, not because they're trying to take anything from you.
Exactly.
Or make your life harder.
or trying to say that like my struggle is worse than your struggle.
No.
That's like, no, definitely I'm just showing not up it. For myself. And exactly. It sounds like you're not doing that. And I'm sorry and that that's your situation.
Absolutely. And I am very sorry for those people because they've been brought up a certain way or been felt like they can't have their own accommodations or they can't make decisions for their own health and well-being. And I hope that they do someday because I have hit that wall a lot. And I know a lot of people are tired. A lot of people are stressed. A lot of people are going through it. But I want them all to know that they have supports that they need them.
Yeah, because I think like one of my second responses to I'm sorry that that's your experience would be, how can I support you?
Exactly.
Like, it sounds like you're going through a lot. What can I do?
Yeah, even though I have my own struggles, if someone came to me and said, and this is actually literally my job.
Yeah.
If someone came to me and said, like, I need help, then I would say, what can I do for you? I wouldn't say, but I do too. Well, that's fine. That's not going to help anyone.
Like, do you want my heating pad? You can have it. We can
yeah, like, off. I'll help you.
If that'll help.
Let's work together.
And I think that is a really key piece because you do see that where people will bring up like, oh, you have to go home, like you're not going to stay late with
must
us.
Be nice. Yeah,
must be yeah. nice, like yeah. Well, go home, man.
Go if you home. Need to go home, then go home.
I need to go home. You should go home. I'm not saying that you should stay.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that anybody should be putting their mental or physical well-being below their work. So if you tell me that you can't do something, let's find a way to work around that.
And let's find someone on the team that has the capacity.
Instead. Yeah, exactly. Let's work on this together. Like, yeah. I want to leave and you want to leave? Okay, well then let's brainstorm right now what we can do in the next 5 minutes so that we can both leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that simple. And if we approach all of our employees or coworkers from that perspective, I think you would find a lot more work gets done, for lack of like, if in a workplace setting, like of course there are other other things that are more important than that. But from the perspective of a coworker or an employer, what you want is to get the work done that needs to get done.
This is how productive, you're gonna do that. Yeah. How productive is a person if they are on the edge, the precipice of exhaustion?
Yeah.
They're mentally and physically not well. How, like,
what's the quality of work there that you're getting?
Rather than letting someone go, yeah, or allowing that person to work from home that day so they can make those accommodations can also be a thing.
Because it's so easy to provide check-ins.
I've worked in many environments that was a very physical job. Then yes, those parts can't be done from home. But there's also other aspects of my job that I definitely could have done from home.
Definitely. I've been in so many like social, like I do a lot of social work and community work. A lot of that is administrative and could be done from home. A lot of that is sending emails and things like developing programs. A lot of that can be done from home. And I'm lucky to be in positions where that was possible, and unlucky that those people wouldn't recognize that.
And in remote first environments, and the people I've talked to in those places, they say, look, I trust you to do your job. And I'll trust you to do your job any way that makes sense to you, as long as it gets done, and it gets done in these parameters, in the sense of here's what needs to be done, X, Y, Z, and you get it done in the right time frame, whatever.
Boom, bang, everything's good.
Yeah. I don't need to know that you're taking your dog for a walk. I don't need to know that you're going to an appointment. I don't need to know that something, unless you need my assistance from something, I don't need to know this. I just need to know, hey, is the work going to get done? Is it getting done? Yes, then fine. Like, and that's a piece of the, we could probably do a whole, I'm not even going to go on a tirade about this, because, but, you know, a lot of jobs could be work from home. Anyway, so that'll probably be another day. We should do a
topic on that, because something that has come up and that I'm seeing in a lot of disability literature and arguments right now is that workers right now in the economy, because of COVID-19, they want remote work, because they're seeing that the work that they have been doing for years could be done from home, and they're seeing the benefits of that in their social life. They're seeing the benefits of that personally. And they're reluctant to move back to the way things were before. And I think we should be reluctant to move back to the way things were before.
Yep.
Because the work got done the way that it was getting done, and people are feeling better about it. And I think we should keep pursuing that if that is what is, you know, beneficial to employees and employers.
Well, I would like to leave everyone with kind of a positive note. And we have our own soapboxes that we can stand on. and you'll probably hear a lot of those things from us based on our experiences. And since Amber and I both worked in like human services and stuff like that, we have other people's experiences to draw from as well. But I just want to say, like, what would be the positive for me? Once, say you've got an employer or a job that's completely ticking all your boxes, what does life look like after that happens, right? So for me, that's like having meaningful work, being accommodated, having the energy and the support and love to get through your day without just surviving. You know, I look at it as thriving in your life, not just at work. But in your life. I love that. You know, having those accommodations, if it's work from home, if it's special equipment you need and not having to pay for it yourself, that's another piece that bugs me. You know, when you hire someone new or you hire someone with accommodations, it should be an expectation that you will provide the equipment, that they don't provide the equipment.
Absolutely.
And things like that. So for me, I know I'll get there someday. I want to be a contributing member of my society, so I will do what I have to do to have those accommodations so I can do so. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, I love the use of the word thriving. I think that that is really important, because I think for me, if I had a job that ticked all the boxes that I was looking for, I would feel appreciated. I would feel validated. I would feel like I have energy to do my personal things. I would have energy to maybe even take on additional work at my place of employment. I would feel fulfilled. I would feel like I was giving back to the community, because I also really value work and finding work that energizes me. I find that with my disability and my limits on my energy, I really respond to work that gives me my energy back as I'm doing it. And I think that that's what employment would look like for me in those situations. And I would be able to have communications with people about my disability and not feel, and feel like that is a collaborative energy. Like that is something where people are like, the work you're doing is great. I love it. I want to make sure it continues.
Yeah.
What can I do to support that? Oh, I've learned this about it. I've thought about this. Maybe we could try that. Would that be useful for you? Like, people going and genuinely supporting me because they value what I bring to a role. Mm-hmm. That would be like ideal work for me.
They see your value.
I do think it's possible. Yeah.
See your value. And also, you will also have the ability to be a team member, and if someone's in the same position, to do the same for them. And also forming kind of peer support at work.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that would be key.
Able to talk to your coworkers that have a similar experience or don't, and just empathize with you without feeling like you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, feeling like we're part of community together.
Yes.
Like, these are your needs. These are my needs. We understand each other. We support each other. We're showing up on the same team, you know, like that would be the dream.
Listening to understand, and understanding that your view may not be what's happening. So asking questions,
being clear. I would love it if people asked me more questions, honestly.
Me too. I find there's a lot of assumptions made about things, my behavior and things I do.
Yeah.
And every aspect of my life. And I just wish people would ask. Before they make that assumption.
I promise you, I
like communicating.
Yep.
Sometimes it could be intense, and that's only because I am just I don't even know I'm always being intense, but I'm not mad or anything. I'm just like, here's how anyways, this is another topic too. But
these are like, these are conversations. It's not saying that asking questions isn't going to get intense, or that it's not going to.
Yeah.
Like, it's, these are not always lighthearted conversations.
No.
But I would absolutely rather have a tough conversation about something you're not understanding about me than to have you going around making assumptions that are going to negatively impact me in other ways that I have less control over. Like,
absolutely.
Just talk to me. I want to have the hard conversation. Let's do it.
And talking to your coworkers about it instead of you.
Yeah. Like, just sit down with me. I'm not going to get mad that you don't understand, because I've also, like, I think, and people do under-recognize that I have had a number of conversations throughout numerous different areas of my life with people who don't understand. I'm used to it. It's fine. If you don't get it, if you don't understand, you don't know where I'm coming from, you don't know what words I'm using, you don't understand how this behavior is reflective of my disability. Like, I've had that conversation before. I can do it again. It's really not a big deal to me. Like, let's just have it. You're not the first person to come to me and not get it. You're probably not even the first person to come to me who doesn't get it and who has been mean about it, you know. Like, I've had worse experiences than you. Like, let's just talk.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. So that being said, talk to us if you need to.
Exactly.
And other peers, we have a peer support group that we run every Wednesday evening at 7 p.m Atlantic time. Lovely, supportive group. We'll put the link in our description of this episode. And hop on it and talk to us.
Or just listen.
Or listen.
You learn a lot from each other.
Definitely. We want to have a safe space. So.
Yes. And if anything from this conversation about accommodations has brought up like other areas where you want us to touch on work and how it intersects for chronic pain, feel free to comment and would love to talk because I do think this is a huge conversation.
Me too.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. And we hope that you enjoyed what we talked about. And we'll see you next time.
Yeah, see you then.